Hi, everyone. My name is David Palmer. I'm a grateful recovered alcoholic. Chris S. will be here in a little while. He's on his way down. We're moving out of the promises, right? Which was kind of fun last week. For those of you who are here, are you going to settle in or not?
What's up? I'm sorry. Stuff is over here.
You know, it's an amazing journey going through the work and actually having an experience of the nine-step promises in my life was something that I truly never thought was going to happen. And the fact that it unfolded and the way that it unfolded and the speed that it unfolded was perfect. It was a life-changing event. And I really thought, you know, that's it. That was like a Michael Jackson video. That's it, right? I had finally gotten to the end result, and at that point, you know, what else was there? You know, I'd go out and I'd be involved in 12 and try to be helped other people, and I forgot, you know, intentionally that we were to continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admit it. Because I thought it was inconvenient to write every night. I mean, you know, and they have these worksheets, and they want you to do stuff, and they want you to... And then you feel guilty when you miss a night, and what happens when your head hits the pillow, and you go, oh, crap, I didn't write? All right, who has done that before? Whose head has hit the pillow and felt guilty immediately? I don't want to feel guilty in AA. I'll just ignore this step. And what becomes inconvenient is when you have to speak on the step and you realize you're not doing it, right? Well, what do you have to say? Because this is an experience, strength, and hope process, right? There doesn't seem to be a lot of hope when you're not doing it. And I remember the first workshop that I gave, I had absolutely no experience in giving workshops. It's not something that somebody teaches you, and they just said, well, just do your best. And we were coming up on probably 4 and 5, and I had a lot of experience with 4 and 5 because I didn't mind going into doing the inventory process. That was kind of like what I did for work, you know, fact checking and seeking to find out what was actually wrong with me, and anything about me was fun, right? So I started to realize that I didn't have anything even in the way of a 10 and 11 practice, and I started to feel a little queasy about the idea that I was going to actually speak about something that I wasn't doing. Because, you know, this program talks about a level of honesty that I just had no idea even existed, not for a guy like me. So what did I do? I went out into the world, and I started to talk to people. Now, if you want to have some fun in Alcoholics Anonymous, right, go out and ask people, what does your 10 and 11 practice look like, right? And just come up on them at a meeting when you know that they can't go anywhere and turn to talk to somebody else and go, what are you doing every night? You know, what do you mean? What am I doing every night? What is your prayer and meditation? Do you go into contemplation or just meditation? What? You know, leave me alone. And I started to go to, and I found this is the odd thing, is I started to go to guys who I trusted and had a lot of respect for, and you know, I had put on a pedestal in a lot of ways, and I said, well, tell me about your 10 and 11 practice. And I caught them off guard. Right, some of them didn't really have a 10 or 11 practice, so I felt immediately better, but I didn't feel any sort of improvement in my understanding of the work. The work's pretty simple. We're gonna go through it tonight, but it's only two paragraphs. But here's a strange thing. So I ran out of people that I respected in AA like in two nights, right? No judgment on my part. It was just an accurate assessment of their spiritual fitness. So I was left with this kind of process that I started to go up to basically everybody. And I started to ask people. Every time I went to a meeting, I'd roll up on somebody, and if I knew the person, I'd ask them, tell me about your 10 or 11 practice. And I started to hear things I found very interesting. I started to hear people talk about 10 or 11 in a way that I hadn't heard about it before. Some people had worksheets. Some people religiously filled out worksheets every night. They had a downloaded copy of this or a downloaded copy of this. And being me, right, I went out in search of all these different things, you know. And I went and talked to people who had a lot of history in alcoholics. I got the four absolutes, ten-step inventory worksheet. I got all the different worksheets, you know. I started looking at these things, and I started talking to people. But here, one of the most amazing things that happened to me in this process was I started to ask people who I didn't know. And one of the reasons I didn't know them was they weren't the flamboyant people in AA. They didn't wear crazy glasses and bow ties, and they didn't. They weren't funny. Right? They were just those people that you'd see at meetings all the time, and they seemed to be happy. You know, and I had judged them, you know, brain damage or something. I really didn't think that what they had, you know, because they weren't talkative, they weren't, exuberant. And I went up, and I remember this one time, I was at this meeting that I didn't go to very often, and there was this little, they had round tables in the room, and in the corner of the room where nobody hung out, there was a round table, and there was an older woman who sat there, and she usually had one or two younger women with her, and she would be knitting. Now, I'm not judging, right? If you're knitting at an AA meeting, go rock on, right? But I figured, you know, I'm running out of people I want to ask. Let me ask her. And I sat down next to her. And what ended up happening was that my entire perception of the 10-step changed in that conversation. Because I sat down next to a woman I wouldn't have normally talked to. I wouldn't have normally taken the time to learn anything about her. She was a knitter, and I wasn't. You know, we are people that would not normally mix, right? And she was quiet. And she was quiet. But what I found out about her was that she was active in working with women. She would get women to work with, and she'd quietly do the work at her house with people. And she'd have an experience with them, and they'd have an experience with her. And they would all go out quietly and you know, kind of a Stepford Wives kind of thing. They go out quietly and they get new people to work with and everything. So I asked her what her 10 and 11 practice was, and it blew me away because she had this incredibly spiritual practice. And it wasn't magical. There was nothing about it that, and I don't even remember the exact practice, but I remember was the experience with her, was that she took the time to seek from looking at her day where she was disconnected from God, where she had been irritable and discontented, where she had, and she put it in a much plainer language. She talked about where she was self-present and not God-present. And then she kind of explained what the inventory looked like, and there might be a few notes. It wasn't this elaborate worksheet from the Hazelden Foundation. It wasn't this, thing that somebody threw together on a spreadsheet or anything. It was just this kind of, I take a few notes on what I've done, where I was in conflict and where I was at, and then I'll go into prayer. You know, and I'll go into prayer and I'll start to talk to God about, I know that I was in conflict, and I know that being in conflict isn't what you want me to do. And I understand it's what I want to do. And I want to be relieved of the reasons that I want to do this. I'm not going to be, she wasn't asking to be relieved of the reasons, you know, the things that had happened. It was never an event, right? But it was, I want to be free of the things that cause me to seek things outside of you, because I want to be closer to you. And it blew me away, because here was this person who I would never talk to. I'd never get involved, and I'd never actually, you know, think that she had anything to add. And it was a moment in my life where I realized just how narrow and shallow my view of the spiritual world was, because one of the most spiritual enhancing things I'd ever heard about the 10-step didn't come from the podium, from the guy who's well-liked and asked to go around the world or whatever the case might be. It didn't come from, you know, the guy that drove the fancy car or anything else. It came from the quiet woman in the back. And I've had this experience with prejudging people who are speaking and thinking that they have something that is someplace that I should be, right? And the truth is that I have no idea where I'm supposed to be. The truth is that, left to my own thinking, I'm in the same place I've always been, self-directed, right? And it's this idea that I continually have this first step failure, where it says our lives are unmanageable. And I come into the rooms and I apply that same metric and that model to my everyday life. It doesn't matter if I think I'm leading a spiritual life. It doesn't matter if I think that I'm doing things on a different footing. It doesn't matter whether I think my roots have grasped a new soil. What's happening is I'm taking this old model and I'm applying it to a new situation. Right? Now I'm with a bunch of other people who are probably doing the goddamn same thing. Right, and we're all kind of cheering each other on, and or pink clouds, and you know, don't drink, go to meetings, and rah, and it doesn't fit well, because what I'm not doing is I'm not getting free of self. Right, I'm just leading this life on the same model. And she talked about being free of self. And I understood finally, it was one of those turning points where I began to understand that everything that was wrong in my life was the concept that I had an idea of how to do this. And I began to understand that I was wrong in almost all the things that I thought. I would later come to realize that I am most likely wrong in everything that I think at this moment when I sit before you. Because if I am right in something, I have no opportunity to experience something new, because I've already decided I'm at the end. I have the answer. And it is in that space that I am the most broken. It is in that space that I have the most chance and the most probability of spinning off the tabletop and becoming what I've always become and what I am, self-directed. Right? We talk about, you know, I don't know, who here has been irritable and discontent in the last 24 hours? Who here hates raising your hand, mentioning that you're irritable and discontent in the last 24 hours? Who here didn't raise your hand and is irritable and discontent about the question? Right? Right? Is it possible that there's absolutely nothing wrong in this world? Is it possible this world is exactly perfect the way it is right now? And the only problem that I face today is the fact that I find something that's irritable? And that somehow she or he or them or they, right, is doing something that bothers me. They're not agreeing with me. Something's threatened. And what I've done now in my 10-step practice is that I don't just seek to understand why I'm separated. You know, what separates God? Why was I irritable and discontented at her today, right? I don't seek to understand why I'm irritable and discontented with her today. What I am seeking today... Hey.
What's up?
I haven't read anything yet. I've just been babbling.
No!
Yeah. What I have found, one of the great gifts coming out of the 10-step practice for me is that... So I'm irritable and discontented with her, right? How unusual is that? She didn't do as I said, right? And I hate the fact that I go into this inventory process going, I'm feeling the same thing. I'm separated for the same reason once again. Right now, it's easy to identify her, right? Because she's there. What's not easy to identify is the string of things that had me separated that I claimed prior to that moment didn't bother me. See, I will fight every single thing as opposed to actually making a decision and turning my will over to the to God and making a decision that my life is unmanageable. I will say, oh, okay, well, you know, before her happened, right, I will say to myself, oh, you know, Bob didn't show up on time. Doesn't bother me. I'm spiritually free now. But it bothered me, right? But it bothered me, but I made a conscious decision that I wasn't going to accept the fact that it bothered me, and I said, okay, it's okay, right? And I had four of those things, right? So what's the string of things that I tried to manage and control before she bothered me, right? So in the 10th step, I'm looking for the trail that leads to the thing that separates me from God. I'm not just looking for that one single event. I'm not asking myself just simply, well, you know, she bothered me again. Well, I'm going to let it go. I'm going to surrender, thank you, and go to sleep. Because that never seems to solve my problem. I need to decompose and to look at what is actually the thing that separates me from God. And I didn't even realize that what I have for myself is this string of failures that tends to occur before the real failures start to become evident. And I can no longer keep myself in a place in a position of neutrality because I in my mind I've already done enough, right, to be with God. Why isn't God giving me the gifts of being okay with others? Right, so now I've become, I've put myself into a place where I made God a give or take God. And in the give or take God place, God's got to reward me for being okay. Right? But that's not the way it works, apparently. Because I've tried that and it doesn't work. I have to be okay with the fact that I'm in a certain place. And I have to be conscious that everything that I'm designed to do is going to have me every other place than where my natural state is. The state that God created was one of grace and dignity and grandeur. This life is one of beauty, and it is of this just unfettered beauty that has unfolded before me, where I've been kept safe and protected my entire life, and I don't recognize it. Right? My natural state is the way that God made me is to be in that place. My natural state as a human being is to try to take ownership of something and place myself in a state that I create. And it's the concept of self-will, right? That's in self-will that I get separated from God, and that's what I'm looking for in the 10th step. So I believe we're on some page somewhere.
My name's Chris. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Chris.
I apologize for being late. I get a call from Dave, the meeting starting. He's like, "Where are you?" I'm like, "I'm chilling. Where are you?" I thought Big Book 10 was starting this week.
84 tips. This thought brings us.
This thought. Okay. So we're starting on step 10. By the time we get to step 10, some amazing things have really happened in our lives. If we're painstaking about the first 9 steps, and we've completed at least a significant amount of our amends, we've significantly changed. We're really looking at the world in a different way. We've got a new pair of glasses on, and we're seeing things differently. Where we used to see a hostile universe, we're not seeing it that way anymore. We're seeing the generosity of the universe. You're starting to have a spiritual awakening. And what a spiritual awakening really is, among other things, is it's a shift in perception. It's looking at your reality in a different way. The alcoholic, because they have been their whole life has been built on a foundation of selfishness and self-centeredness, that's kind of warped our perspective of the world. And we're more concerned about what's that going to mean to me, than can we be of help? So by the time we get to step 10, some really significant things have happened. Now, if you're going through the steps a second time, I believe very, very much that there's a school of thought out there, and I don't mean to be critical of it. I'm hopefully not going to be, but they believe that you go through the steps one time and then you live in 10, 11, and 12. And if that works, I think that's the right way to do it. I've got an experience of going through the steps at least 10 times, and each time I go through, I'm awakened to a deeper level of my life, and I'm grateful for that experience. It's a beneficial experience, and I've also seen that the people who argue for only going through the steps once are usually people who've only gone through the steps once. So they're not really, they don't really have the experience of going through it multiple times, so they shouldn't even engage in the argument. You know what I mean? You're going up against somebody's experience with your opinion. And opinions kill. We don't live by advice in Alcoholics Anonymous. We live by spiritual principles. And we share our experience, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like today. So by the time we get to step 10, some amazing things are happening. Now, if you're going through the steps multiple times, you'll be able to go through the steps with a whole nother level of power by applying steps 10 and 11 and 12 to the process, to your life, as you're moving through the steps again. So you're only going to go through the steps based on, faith one time. After you've had the experience of what the steps are going to do, you're now going to go through the steps with some real power. Because it's going to be in you and moving through you, this power, and you're going to be able to move through the steps with an assurance of the outcome. Well, when I first approached the steps, I really wasn't sure, but my plans were bad. You know what I mean? I was the owner of a bag of the worst plans you can imagine, and when I showed up in Alcoholics Anonymous, I turned my will and my life over to Fish Food Phil, my sponsor, and he always had a better plan than my plan. He told me, "Chris, please share your plan before you actually do it." You know what I mean? Don't don't come and tell me later that your plan didn't work. Share your plan with me first so we can do something else, you know. And he was right. I was just, you know, I would shoot myself in the foot like crazy. But as we move into step 10, hopefully we've got some experience under our belt with inventory. We've got some experience with the honesty of the fifth step exercise. You know, we've got some real power going on in our life because we've gone out and we've made a huge chunk of the amends that we owe. You know, we're on a payment plan for the money we owe, or you know, we've made direct amends to ex-bosses and ex-wives or husbands, you know, family members, friends. You know, the people that when you think about them, you go like, oh, you know, like I was forever doing that. Like, oh God, oh, you know, so and so. You know what I mean? So we've got some experience actually setting right some of that stuff, and you know, Dave, I'm sure shared a lot of really good stuff on step 10. I'm not going to belabor it, but I will say this: that step 10 has a lot to do with the middle part of step 11. The middle part of step 11 is as we move through our day. Well, step 10 is my moving through the day step. And what it does is it encompasses all the spiritual principles that you've already learned and all the spiritual principles that you're going to learn. So it's like a grab bag of the 12 steps and other spiritual principles that you apply to your life in a reactive way. If something comes up, if all of a sudden you get pissed off, you know, you can reach in for 4, 5, 8, 9. You know, if you start to feel depression or anxiety, or you're unsure of something, or you're in the middle of a very confusing situation, a lot of times you can look back on the step work that you've got experience with, and you can apply some of those principles. And you know, I did this very begrudgingly. Understand that I didn't start practicing the steps out of any sense of virtue. I wasn't trying to be a better AA member or something. I actually was forced into this stuff because I just didn't want to feel bad anymore. You know what I mean? You know how bad we feel and how often we feel bad? Most of the time, that's why I drank, because my emotions were, you know, in the toilet all the time. So I'm just, listen, I'm sober and feeling bad is like a really bad place to be. I don't believe you can stay sober in Alcoholics Anonymous if you're an alcoholic, feeling bad all the time. You know, having life suck all the time. It talks about, in some of the later chapters, it says you're not going to be able to face the trials and tribulations ahead if you don't have some kind of spiritual fortitude that has been built up by taking these steps. So I'm going to read, I'm going to start reading on step 10. This thought brings us to step 10. What thought? The promises, the thought of the promises and how our lives are changing, which suggests that you continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as you go along. So you continue to take inventory, that's step 4. Continue to set right any new mistakes as you go along. That's basically step 9. You vigorously commence this way of life as you cleaned up your past. You have entered the world of the Spirit. Now, I want to stop for a minute. What does that mean? Earlier in the book, it says when we talk about spiritual concepts, what you're supposed to do is ask yourself, what do they mean to you? One of the things that we don't want to do is define all the attributes of your higher power. We're not going to define whether you need a Christian higher power, a Jewish higher. We're out of that business. We don't want to deal with that. But we want you to consider spiritual principles. So when it says you've entered the world of the Spirit, what does that mean? Now, when I think about it, what does it mean to me is, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, my spirit has awakened. Until I had gone through these steps, I was asleep, dreaming I was awake. And that's the best way that I can put it. Because I saw the world with these really dark glasses. I saw the world with through resentment and anxiety and self-centered fear and guilt and shame and remorse and all that crap. It was and it was a hostile world. And I gotta take what I need, you know, that type of an attitude. I'm in the world of the spirit right now. There's two things that you hear sometimes in Alcoholics Anonymous. The spirit of the fellowship. The spirit of the fellowship is what we have here tonight. The spirit of the fellowship is Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. There's a spirit in these meetings that we can all feel. It's palatable. We heal together. But then there's a fellowship of the spirit. And to be in the fellowship of the Spirit, what they're talking about is having an awakened spirit, having experience with these 12 steps. When that happens, you can recognize other people whose spirits have awakened through this process. You can just tell they're always about the business of service. They're sponsoring people. They got commitments, and normally 95% of the time they're very happy and they're very content with their life. What is the world of the spirit? The world of the spirit is what they start talking about in step 11. Being in the realm of the spirit, we intuitively know how to handle situations that used to baffle us. So that realm of intuition is basically knowing without conscious thought. Just knowing the right thing to do. That's part of being in the fellowship of the spirit. Enter the world of the spirit to me. And to each of us has the ability to define this, you know, in whatever way they want to. Your next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for your lifetime. So practicing these principles in all of our affairs is something that needs to continue for our lifetime. Relapse is gigantic in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. My first meeting was in 1984. Okay, I started going in 1989 on a daily basis, and there is an extremely few amount of people that are left. And if I had a dollar for everybody that blew through here and stayed a couple of months and got pissed off and went off and got drunk, I would be a billionaire. Okay, relapse is monstrous in this fellowship, and it has to do with a refusal to embrace spiritual principles. That's why we relapse. It's not because she left, because we drink when she stays. It's not because I lost the job, because I drank when I had the job. It's not causal. We relapse because we fail to embrace spiritual principles. In the best way we can. Each of us has our own challenges. Some of us get into this quicker than others. Some of us take a lot longer. Some of us come from a very, very, you know, a lower continuum, some of us are already maybe a little bit spiritually attuned, so, you know, it comes easier for us. But I think what keeps us from relapsing is just an attempt to keep trying. You know what I mean? It doesn't matter where you are now. If you try to practice spiritual principles from the place you are now and you really make an effort and you get busy and you do your job in Alcoholics Anonymous, you're not going to relapse. You know, rarely have we seen a person fail who's thoroughly followed our path. The problem is rarely today do you see anybody following the path. You know, that's why so many people relapse. Your next function is to grow in
Continue to watch
for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. One of my spiritual advisors gave me this exercise for 6 months. He said, Chris, what I want you to do is, all I want you to do is watch for these things. Selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. These are the things that we inventory. These are the things that show up in our four step. Watch for them to manifest in your life. And then apply spiritual principles to them. That's a 6 months exercise right there. You know, I don't know about anybody else, but I am pre-programmed to just do it wrong. I mean, my default setting is, if I get pissed off, is to figure out why that person is an asshole. You know what I mean? If I want something, my default setting is to just get it. You know what? If I'm confronted by somebody who's angry about, you know, why I was late for work or whatever, my default setting is to sell the traffic. The traffic, Dave. you know, when I overslept. You know what I mean? I mean, that's my default setting. I was built to lie. You know, and that's not unusual for alcoholics. When these things crop up, we ask God to remove them. We discuss them with someone immediately. We make amends quickly if we've harmed anyone. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. That's a wonderful spiritual exercise, because the thing that takes us out is fear, resentment, selfishness, and dishonesty. Those are the things that will sabotage your sobriety, your recovery. If you continue to allow these things to run roughshod over your life, you are going to relapse if you're an alcoholic. Now, here are some promises. Here are some of the 10-step promises. You know, there's a lot of meetings that read the 9-step promises. The 9-step promise. That's the word that I take exception to. I don't mind you reading the promises. But when you say the 12 promises, you're saying, there's 12 steps, there's 12 traditions, and there's 12 promises. There's a lot more promises than 12, folks. That, you know, somebody went through this book, I never did it, but somebody went through this book just highlighting the promises, and there was something like 175 of them. I mean, you know, to limit us to the 12 9-step promises is ripping us off. Here are some of the 10-step promises. And you have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. For by this time, sanity will have returned. That's a real bonus for some of the people that I sponsor. When that happens, you know. And look, in step two, it says, God can restore us to sanity. In step 10, it says sanity is returned. That's a pretty good promise. You will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, you will recoil from it as if from a hot flame. You will react sanely and normally. You will find that this has happened automatically. You know, it's funny. How many times have we fought the urge to drink? How many times have we said to ourselves, no, no, and then ended up at the bar? This is saying that the alcohol problem is going to be removed. We don't hit alcohol head on. We go around the back and we start applying spiritual principles. And what happens is the alcohol problem is removed by the power greater than ourselves. You will see that your new attitude toward liquor has been given you without any thought or effort on your part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. You're not fighting it, neither are you avoiding temptation. You will feel as though you had been placed in a position of neutrality. You feel safe and protected. You have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for you. You are neither cocky nor afraid. This is our experience. This is how we react as long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. They say that 30 times in this book, that it's our responsibility to keep in fit spiritual condition. It's our responsibility to take these steps. It's our responsibility to practice these principles. If we're not doing that, we can't be in touch with the power greater than ourselves that restores us to sanity and keeps us safe and protected from alcohol. Sometimes it's a hard concept to grasp, but that's the best way that I can explain it. Now, 10 times here, it basically said the problem of drinking alcohol will be removed. Those are good promises, especially if you came in here like me. A lot of people come in because of DUIs, the probation officer, the mad family, the pissed off boss. All those are good reasons. I came in because literally alcohol was going to kill me. The last detox I went through was the most hellacious experience of delirium tremens I can imagine. I would not have survived another one. I would have killed myself through suicide before I would have experienced another 3-day period of delirium tremens like I experienced. And I knew I was done. I knew if I was to pick up alcohol, the next time I pick up alcohol, it will kill me, or I will kill me. You know, so I came in here pretty beaten down. It is easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on your laurels. What your laurels are is yesterday's accomplishments. you got to look at it like this. Can you survive on food you ate 2 years ago? No. So we can't survive on the four step we did with Harvey Gerbil Feather, our sponsor, in 1982. We have to continue to practice these principles. We got to continue to do this stuff. You don't just do this and then go to meetings and share. You know, if you're an alcoholic, what will happen is you'll slowly, your spiritual condition will slowly deteriorate. You'll go insane. You'll drink again. You'll commit suicide. Or at best, you're just going to be one of those cranky bastards that, you know, just rah, 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 in the meeting. You know what I mean? Like, kid, you know, just take the cotton out of your mouth and stick it in your ears or whatever the hell. Whatever. The hell. I used to bump into those guys in the old days. Oh man. Every once in a while, they'll say, you'll be talking about a step, and they'll go, kid, if they told me back in the day that I'd have to do all these steps and do all this work and do all this stuff, I'd have been right out the door. And the first thing I think about was, who the hell would have cared? You know what I mean? You're a real highlight in my meeting, Gus. You know what I mean? But I don't judge. It's easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on your laurels. You're headed for trouble if you do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. We are not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve. Every day is a day when you have to carry the vision of God's will into all of your activities. You know, it's pretty strong words. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. These are thoughts which must go with us constantly. You can exercise your willpower along this line all you want. It's the proper use of the will. So what's the proper use of the will? Applying prayer, applying meditation, applying spiritual principles. You'll have the willpower to do that. You will. You're not going to have the willpower to just not go to meetings and not drink. Or, you know, alcoholism is so bad. It kills like 95% of the people that have alcoholism die from it. You know, it's a terrible illness. It's much worse than cancer or heart disease or any of those things. Because those kind of illnesses, if they're terminal, they at least allow you the dignity of putting your affairs in order. You know what I mean? And saying goodbye to your loved ones. You know what's going on. In alcoholism, you're just a raging tornado of emotions, and everybody either pities you or hates you. You know, and that is a really bad way to check out. So much has already been said about receiving strength, inspiration, and direction from Him who has all knowledge and power. If you've carefully followed directions, the steps, you have begun to sense the flow of His Spirit into you. You've started to have a spiritual awakening. To some extent, you've become God-conscious. You have begun to develop this vital sixth sense, but you must go further, and that means more action. I'm gonna stop with this, but I do want to mention this. To some extent, you have become God conscious. What is it like to be God conscious? I think it's to have the conception of God, and the conception of attempting to do God's will in the forefront of your consciousness. Always knowing that there are spiritual principles that you need to be practicing. So that the power can be with you to overcome your character defects and overcome alcoholism. And that's what I think it is. You've begun to develop this vital sixth sense. The sixth sense, I think, is that sense of intuition, that sense of understanding that God's got your back. You know, in step four, when we went through the fear inventory, I had a major awakening in one of my fear inventories one time. And this is what it was. I was listing out all of my fears, and I had just done a third step prayer. So I had just made the decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God, and now I'm inventorying fear, and it occurred to me, what the hell do I have to be afraid of? If I've placed myself on God's team, what is He going to let get through to me that's not in my best interest somehow? It may not be comfortable. A lot of times the spiritual life is not comfortable. But what's going to get through to me that's really bad for me if I'm about the Father's business. And it was like one of those acid moments. Like, you know, all of a sudden, you know, I started to outgrow fear right at that moment. You know, I'm not afraid of the things that I used to be afraid of. It doesn't mean I don't have, you know, natural fear of, you know, if I see a rattlesnake there or something, you know. I mean, I've got responsible fear. But I don't have that self-centered fear that was just that evil and corroding kind of fear that was all anxiety and being uncomfortable and not wanting to be somewhere. I just can't wait to get the hell out. You know, all that stuff is fear. I was able to move forward from that, you know, with a lot of work on these steps. Right, Dave?
I'm sorry, what'd you say?
Start over, please.
So I'm actually, Chris, I'm actually a little reluctant to go into step 11. I think it's like something that's worth to do an hour on, and I think we have about 15 minutes left. And Chris and I are going to be coming back in the fall after Big Book 10. Do you want to stop here, or do you want to actually do
Yeah. What time is it?
Well, yeah.
Okay, that would be fine.
Yeah.
I think it's a good segue.
Yeah. I'd like to talk just a little bit about, before I awkwardly stop earlier than normal, I would like to talk a little,
Is that for me?
That's for getting out of bed and coming down.
Nice.
It's from Robbie.
Oh, okay. Don't tell Andrea.
Chris, she won't. She'll never listen to the CD.
Honestly, yeah.
Chris has a loan sharking business on his side. He'll spiritually break your legs.
It's only $10 a step. Don't worry about it.
But you know. One of the things that I just want to talk a little bit about the actual mechanics of my 10-step today. One of the things that I do is you ever see those little moleskin books that you can buy? And they're always really cool looking. You buy them for a reason, then they sit in your drawer. You never use them, right? Well, I bought about 6 of those things. I'm on my second one now. And it's in my back pocket. The most amazing period of my spiritual growth, a thing that literally, I would honestly say, rocketed me into the fourth dimension, right, if that's an accurate description, was when I made a conscious decision, because I felt as though I didn't have a solid prayer and meditation or 10-step practice in place, was to buy those books, and this is about 4 years ago, and to start to carry one of those books with me. Now, if you go to the front page of WBBW.org, there's a PDF on the bottom left of the front page. It's called the Doug M. It's called the Doug M. worksheet, or it's called the Step 12 worksheet, or whatever it is. And a friend of Chris's did this really great job of literally putting the instructions from the book into a document, which is about 14 pages long, I think. But there's about 2 or 3 pages on 10 and 11. And what I did was I downloaded this and I printed out the 10 and 11 instructions. So it has a set of keywords, which we just read some of them, right? And there are some in the keywords being
selfish, dishonest,
watch. We continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear, right? So in my little book at night, the first word I write is resentment, right? What I would like to say every night, so I'll put the date and I'll put the time. What I'd like to say every night is dash no. Right? That's what I'd like to say. Sometimes my ego has me write the word no when it's not true. Right? But many times I'll write a little yes. Right? If it's anything more than a little, I will tend to do a 4-column inventory. Right? If I've already done inventory during the day on it, right, I don't necessarily repeat it at night. So I have these 4 words, and all I do for my 10-step is I write these 4 words in a dash, and at what level do I have these? Because most of the time I'll have a little bit of error. There are some days in my book that actually are basically no for all these. But then there's another set of keywords and instructions in 11, which Chris started to talk about in talking about 10. You know, have we kept a secret, right? I didn't like that one. I tried to ignore that one. You know, are we packing into the stream of life, or are we drifting into worry and remorse? You know, these are all things that I've turned into questions for my 10-step review, and it makes it really simple, because if you forget the words, you flip it back to the day before. and there are the words. And I did that for 9 months straight religiously. I never missed a day. I would do it in the morning after doing prayer and meditation, right? I would review myself from the previous day, and I would do it in the afternoon on the train ride home from Manhattan, and I would review it from the morning prayer and meditation till the train ride. And what I found was the world took on a new vision. I literally felt like I was somebody that I didn't even know when I would show up someplace. It was a different person. It didn't happen overnight, but it happened on a basis that was unbelievable. And I started to find that nothing really bothered me anymore. And it was a bizarre experience. Because everything used to bother me on some level, even if I wouldn't talk about it. What do you think happened after 9 months? I slacked off. I slacked off. And what do you think happened to my spirit after that? It slacked off too. My spiritual, the quality of the experience that I'm having with God and with you is directly related to my willingness to be honest in a written form. And I hate that. I want to be able to think about this stuff. I want to be able to use my great cranium to think my way through this stuff. But apparently the pen to paper makes a difference in my life, and I don't even know why that is. And I would like to have claimed that it was, well, that was the way we were raised in school. Remember we had to write everything like 11 times, you know, and everything. Yeah, right? If you're old like me, before the iPad, and you know, everything was chalk and paper, right? We all had chalk and paper. The teacher would... And if we were lucky, we'd get to stamp the erasers out in the yard at break or something. Oh, we're special today. Let's go slap the erasers together.
White lung.
Right. White lung. And I'd like to say that's it. But apparently, I don't think that truly is for me what's it. What happens is there's something about writing it for me that is an admission process. That's where I'm at. And that's what's actually truly happening in my life. Because I can have a thought and it takes but a moment, but when I write it out, I have to think about writing it out, I have to think about writing out what's happening, and I have to actually review it. And what does it say? It says we're searching the leveling of pride, right, and confessing of shortcomings. And this is a process that they have us doing constantly throughout the book. Every time we turn around, they're asking us to level our damn pride. And it's annoying, but it's true. I would like to be free of these things permanently by taking one action, and that's not it. I have to take many actions to get momentarily free of these things. So I'm going to... Chris, do you have anything you want to add?
I want to talk just a second about Dr. Harry Thiebaud. Dr. Harry Thiebaud was one of the original influences on Alcoholics Anonymous. He was a psychiatrist, and he studied the alcoholics that were in AA quite a bit in the early days. And his writings are very interesting, and they're mainly about the rebuilding of the ego. He saw that the alcoholics that relapsed, he described it as people whose egos had rebuilt. They'd gone through the step work, they'd done some initial step work, but then they rested on their laurels, and all of a sudden they were in charge again, and all of a sudden they drank again. And so I think, especially step 10, and you know, when we pick back up in 3 months or whatever it's going to be, we'll be talking about step 11. It has a lot to do with staying right size. We need to stay right size. We should, and being right size is just having an accurate self appraisal. Not being prone to extremes of grandeur or extremes of. Lack of self-esteem or anything. Really, really knowing kind of where we are and kind of what we are. And I just want to mention before we stop, I can't read very well anymore. I had this thing called a retinal occlusion, and what it is, it's when a vein in your eye collapses, and I lost a gigantic amount of vision in my right eye. So it's not a problem. All I have to do is go to a doctor who injects my eye with Novocaine and then puts an antibiotic in there and then injects this fluid into my eyeball that I can actually see going into my eyeball, and then has to wash my eye out with like a garden hose while he's holding his foot on my head. Right? It's actually worse than it sounds. So Anyway, I've had that happen, and I've got a bunch of books that I'm just, it's just going to be too difficult for me to read. I'm bringing them here. You know, please take these books and get them out of here. I'm sure it's a big pain in the ass for the people to clean up after the meeting to carry all these books back and forth all the time. So, you know, a spiritual book a month, you know, will keep the bottle away. Right, Dave?
Right.
All right, so I'm going to open the meeting up to concerns only. Or questions. Yeah.